It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll dig a little deeper into some of the overlooked items in Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal.
First, it might feel a little like 2011 at the state capitol today as unions gather to protest a fast-tracked bill that would make it harder for some of them to exist in Wisconsin. But the private sector right-to-work bill being discussed today is different than Act 10. As Sean Johnson reports, Governor Scott Walker spent years saying right-to-work would not happen under his watch before eventually saying he would sign it.
In Walker's 2012 recall campaign, right-to-work was suddenly a very hot topic. Democrats wanted to make the case that Act 10 was just the tip of the iceberg for the governor and that Walker would go after private sector unions next. Walker never promised to veto right-to-work, but speaking to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in April of 2012, the governor made it clear that Act 10 was about public sector unions, and he would not pursue a right-to-work bill that banned mandatory union dues at private sector businesses.
From our standpoint, it's never going to get to me. I mean, the reality is, we've talked about this before, private sector unions are my partner in economic development.
In May of 2012, the issue boiled up in a big way after a documentary surfaced showing a major Walker donor asking the governor about right to work and Walker doing little to dissuade her. When reporters asked about it at the state GOP convention, Walker was much more forceful.
It's not going to get to my desk. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure it isn't there.
2 years later, in his reelection campaign, right to work emerged as an issue in some Republican legislative primaries. Unions said that if Walker and Republicans won in November, it would absolutely lead to right to work in Wisconsin. When Walker was asked to react to that statement in September of 2014, he said,
"Absolutely wrong. Couldn't be more inaccurate. That's the kind of scare factor and distortions that they tried to put out before."
Even after the election, Walker said right to work would be a distraction from his agenda. But once Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald announced that the Senate would pass a right to work bill, it took Walker just a few hours to announce that he would sign it. It's a far different approach than Walker took with Act 10. But this has all played out before, not in Wisconsin necessarily, but in Michigan with Republican Governor Rick Snyder.
My perspective is, as I've made it clear, it's not on my agenda. Right to work is an issue that's a very divisive issue.
Snyder, like Walker, said repeatedly that right to work was not on his agenda. But when Michigan's Republican legislative leaders made it clear that they would pursue right to work, Snyder changed his tone.
When it arrives on my desk, I plan on signing it. We've had a lot of good discussions on this topic, healthy discussions, and I think this is what's best for Michigan.
Michigan Public Radio's Rick Pluta covered that debate and the protests it spawned. A lot of what Pluta describes sounds like it could have happened in Wisconsin in the run-up to Act 10, a big, impassioned, loud, sustained demonstration where protesters filled the Capitol's rotunda, its hallways, and its lawn. But Wisconsin's protest stayed largely peaceful. Michigan's right-to-work protest did not.
There were times when pepper spray was used to try and push back the protesters. In one particular case, a pro-right-to-work group, Americans for Prosperity, hired a hot dog vendor, and they set up a tent in the middle of the Capitol lawn, and the tent was torn down, and the vendor's hot dog cart was destroyed.
Despite the energy and the anger, Pluta says Michigan Republicans did not pay a political price over right-to-work, probably because these days most people don't belong to a union. That's even more true in Wisconsin, where union membership took a substantial hit after the last labor battle 4 years ago. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
While right-to-work has been dominating the headlines since news broke last Friday, the state budget has been the other big story in Wisconsin government. We've been seeing a lot of stories about potential cuts to the University of Wisconsin system, changes at the DNR, and education reform. But some of the major changes outlined in the proposal have gotten lost in the shuffle.
Here to dig a little deeper into the budget proposal is Jason Stein. He's a Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jason, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be here.
So Governor Walker's budget proposal, over 1,800 pages long, what made some of the parts of this budget get right out into public consciousness and others maybe stay below the radar?
Well, Rob, there's always,
you know, the big ticket items, the items that affect the most people in the state, that are the biggest dollar items, you know, and sometimes just things that are, for whatever reason, sexier to the public or to the media than others. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot happening right now. We've got a governor who's a real 2016 contender. We've got protests today at the Capitol over right to work. And then we've got, you know, major proposals like a $300 million cut to the state university system. So amid all that, it's not surprising to me that a lot of these details on other major things just still haven't gotten attention.
And looking at the document itself, it seems like it takes a while to digest what's going on. I opened up the document today. It didn't crash my computer, even though it's 1,800 pages. And a lot of it is, you know, three or four words and then colon and then two pages of ordinance numbers that it changes or code numbers that
Absolutely.
It changes. So
is
it just hard to figure out what page whatever does sometimes?
Sure. I mean, and I've covered five of these budgets over the years, over the past decade, and there's a order in that things always happen, Rob. And the way it works is you've got the governor puts forward his budget proposal, whoever the governor is, and, you know, for the first day and even to a certain extent for weeks afterward, a lot of the public is relying on the governor's presentation of his budget or her budget to sort of understand what's in this big 1,800-page document that is written, as you point out, in this sort of legalese, right? That the plain English summaries of what the bill are doing right now are only available from the administration. You know, within a matter of days, we're going to start receiving from the legislature's nonpartisan budget office. We're going to receive their plain English summary of everything that's in this 1,800-page budget. And then you will start seeing, you know, more news stories, more public comment about these other items that right now the administration may not be highlighting, but we may, you know, the public may see as important in the coming days.
Well, in your new piece that you co-wrote with Patrick Marley, you got into some of those issues. I want to cover some of them. One of the changes that hasn't gotten as much attention, phasing out a property insurance program to local governments around the state that I gather the state provides. What would change here and who would it affect?
Well, it could affect all kinds of people around the state. I mean, the city of Milwaukee uses it, Milwaukee County, some of the outlying suburbs around Milwaukee, a number of local governments all around the state make use of programs like that, and even some entities that you might not suspect, like, for instance, you know, the Green Bay Packers, their Lambeau Field Stadium District goes through the city of Green Bay to obtain its property insurance. And so, you know, this state program is available to cities like Green Bay as an option for, you know, again, insuring everything from their local government buildings to even, you know, Lambeau Field as a possibility. So, I mean, it can actually affect, you know, pieces of property and governments all around Wisconsin. I mean, it's definitely not sexy, but, I mean, it's something that if you're a mayor, if you're a city council, that sort of thing may really matter to you.
We're talking to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Jason Stein about some of the proposals in Governor Walker's state budget that haven't gotten the headlines yet.
And you can call in. What do you think about some of the proposals, maybe the phasing out of that property insurance program or the incentive to state employees who opt out of state insurance or overhauling the state's family care program? What issues do you think need more attention in this budget? We're picking up our discussion about some of the lesser-known items in Governor Walker's budget proposal with Jason Stein. He's a Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
And you can join the conversation with your thoughts and questions. What issues in this budget proposal matter most to you? Are there things that aren't in the headlines that you have been worried about, concerned about, or are glad are changing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jason, one that has gotten some attention in the media, a proposal in the budget to give a $2,000 incentive for state employees to opt out of the state health insurance. How would this affect the state's bottom line?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish I knew exactly. The idea is that you would try and get enough people to opt out of the state's health insurance, which by the way costs, you know, quite a bit more than $2,000 a year. That in that way you would save money. I mean, these would be people that might go on their spouse's plan, or, you know, I guess in perhaps limited circumstances, perhaps on a parent or other family member's coverage. But, you know, the question is, already you have a certain number of people that are opting out already, right? And so going forward, then you would be paying each of these people $2,000 a piece to do what they're doing already. And so the question is, are you going to save enough money to make up for the millions of dollars that you're going to be paying people who are already opting out right now? So, you know, right now the state had a consultant study it. I believe the figures were that it would do some between save the state $4 million and cost the state $4 million and save $18 million, but that's a pretty big range, obviously.
And then another issue you write about, the state's family care program. This would be overhauled in this 1,800-page budget proposal. What is the family care program as it currently exists anyway?
Yeah, that's a really important proposal, and you're going to hear more about that one. Family care is a proposal, or a program rather, that provides long-term care to people, the elderly and disabled, who can't care for themselves without some help. And it does that outside of nursing homes. So the idea is to keep people in their homes, in group homes, places like that, right, outside of nursing homes, which tend to be expensive and are places where a lot of us don't really want to live. This proposal would, in a very fundamental way, overhaul family care. And, you know, there could be impacts in terms of people that are in the program right now might have to change their primary care doctor. They might have to change the person who comes into their home to maybe help them wash or do meals or do other essential day-to-day activities. Or, you know, they might even have to change, in the case of disabled folks who live in a group home, they might even have to change where they live. So, I mean, these are all unanswered questions that we have right now, and that we're, you know, going to be seeking answers to those in the coming months.
And is this one of those issues where you expect to see pushback from people with disabilities, from organizations that advocate for them?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you're already seeing that. That, you know, you're not hearing about it because people like me are, you know, tied up. I was tied up all day today, you know, covering a right to work proposal. And, you know, I'm also keeping busy, as you know, many of your WPR colleagues are, covering the governor's potential presidential campaign. So, you know, this pushback is already occurring to a certain extent, you know, and there's also just a lot of questions being asked, and you're going to hear more about it in the coming weeks.
Now, you asked for this piece we've been talking about some legislative leaders for their thoughts on some of these issues. Are they there yet on a lot of the things we've been talking about?
No. I mean, in terms of getting their arms around it, no, absolutely not. Because, I mean, I think most lawmakers in Wisconsin and certainly, you know, the leadership, both Republican and Democrat, they really put a lot of faith in the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. So until they hear from those analysts, you know, and get their take on what the budget bill does, they're not going to necessarily sign on to all kinds of different provisions in it, for one. And two, you know, again, little did I know when I talked to the Republican leaders for that story, I think it was on Thursday, I talked to them, you know, I was catching them as they were walking between meetings on right-to-work legislation. So, you know, some of these other, which was then announced on Friday, that proposal. So, you know, some of these other second-tier items were probably not front and center in their minds late last week, and they obviously they still aren't.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for joining us again.
It's my pleasure, Rob. Thanks.
That's Jason Stein. He's a Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was here to break down some of the lesser-known items. It's a long budget proposal. He's telling us about a few of the things that haven't made headlines, at least not yet.